Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This is Basketball History 101 with Rick Loaiza.
Welcome back to award-winning Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network. I am your host, Rick Loaiza, and this is the podcast where we bring to life some of the forgotten stories from basketball history. We are bringing old-school basketball to a new school audience, and today we bring you the story of some of basketball's early rules committees. For today's episode, I want to take us all the way back to before 1950. In fact, I want to take us back even before the creation of the NBA. I wanted to take this episode all the way back to the early 1900s when basketball was first developing. When we started this podcast over 3 years ago, one of our missions was to focus on the early history of the game. So here we go. The reason I wanted to share the story of the early rules committees because of how effective they were in keeping the game of basketball the game of basketball. And here is what I mean by that. There are a lot of other sports out there that have common roots. Most every other game in the world developed from some earlier version of the game. For example, baseball developed from an old game called Rounders. Lacrosse developed from an early Native American game. These games all developed over time from earlier versions. Rules and field sizes have changed. In some cases, the modern version of the game barely resembles the earlier version of the same game. Now, let me talk about a few other sports that have common roots, which really gave me the idea for today's story. If you are familiar with American football, then you might see how it is similar to rugby. Both games have a lateral pass, both have end zones, and both have touchdowns. But have you seen Australian rules football, or Gaelic football, or Canadian football? Again, these are games that have a common root. Just like a pair of cousins have an ancestor in common, these various versions of football and rugby have a common ancestor. At some point in the 1800s, all of these games split off from each other like branches on a family tree and turned into the games that we have today. Of course, there is nothing wrong with the idea that they split off from each other and developed into different games. That's fine. That's just the way it went. As these games developed into different parts of the world, and they took on very different looks. In many ways, that is natural for a game to develop a certain way in one country while developing very differently on the other side of the world. Football and rugby are a prime example of how differently the game can develop in Australia, the United States, Ireland, Canada, and elsewhere. And here comes the big point of this episode. Basketball at one point was at risk of doing the same thing. The original game that James Naismith invented in 1891 in Massachusetts was in a position where it was going to start splitting off into quite different versions of the game from each other. And that's where the early rules committees come in. Today, an organization called FIBA governs basketball and its rules for the entire world. The organization, based in Switzerland, controls the game of basketball and sets its rules that all leagues around the world have to follow, except for the NBA. And this is just a quick side note, but the NBA is the only league in the world that is part of FIBA, but is also allowed to make its own rules without having to check with anybody outside the NBA. However, FIBA did not always exist, and if you want to know the story of how FIBA was created, go back and check out episode 98, where I give you the history of that organization. So, who controlled the game of basketball and who controlled how the rules changed over the years? Well, no one was in charge, at least not officially. And this was sort of an issue. The game of basketball had spread so fast around the world that it was being played very differently from one place to another. In some places, they were playing with as many as 18 players on the court at the same time. In other places, they were playing with 6 players on each team divided into offensive specialists and defensive specialists. The 3 offensive specialists had to stay in the front court and could not cross the midcourt line. The three defensive specialists had to stay in the backcourt. Basically, it made for two separate three-on-three games going on. It was extremely unusual. In some places, they had a tip-off after every made basket, meaning that a team with a really tall player could make a basket, win the tip, thereby maintaining possession, and then make another basket and win the tip again, and just keep doing that over and over. Some places got rid of the tip-off after every basket and just automatically gave the ball to the team that got scored on, just like they do today. Even points were counted differently in different places. The original game of basketball counted each made basket as 1 point. And there was no such thing as free throws. In some versions of the game, every third foul by one team was an automatic point for the other team. Basically, people were modifying and changing the rules in each region of the United States and even in each region of the world. Part of the reason is because the game had spread so fast around the world, but with no official organization regulating the game itself. If it had not been for those early rules committees, the game of basketball could have developed into 3 or 4 completely different versions of the game, just like American football, Canadian football, Australian football, and Gaelic football, or even rugby. But because of these committees, there is only one kind of basketball. Yes, the rules are slightly different between different levels of the game. For example, the rules at the youth level are a little different than the rules at the high school level, university level, and professional level. For example, in the youth league where I used to coach my own children, there was a rule that if a player scored in his or her own basket, it would not count, and it was treated just like a turnover, and the other team would get the ball out of bounds. And that was how it went. It is amazing how many times a 6-year-old player tries to score on their own basket because they're just so excited that they're open. But other than these minor variations because of the age of the players, it is still the game of basketball, and there is only one kind. Well, this is a good place to take a break, and I'll be right back with more details on the actual committees and how they were put together.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog for gallery prints and gift items, plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hello, sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out! Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
Welcome back to the show, and let us continue with the story on the early basketball rules committees. The very first rules committee was the YMCA, because after all, James Naismith was an employee of the YMCA when he invented the game. In fact, he invented it at the direction of his boss, Dr. Luther Gulick. It was Gulick who identified the need for an indoor game to be played on a hard surface that was non-contact and yet still fun and competitive. Winters in Massachusetts are harsh, and there were no indoor games at the time to keep players busy during the long winter months. They mostly just did calisthenics and basic gymnastics moves. So the game of basketball was considered by many to belong to the YMCA. Now, technically, basketball did not belong to anybody, but the game was invented in a YMCA and was primarily spread through YMCAs all over the world. So, in 1892, just 1 year after the game was invented, Dr. Gulick put together a group of other YMCA directors, and they would govern basketball as a group. Within that first year, it was quickly realized that Naismith's original 13 rules did not cover all of the situations that they encountered. New rules had to be added as new situations and new moves presented themselves. For example, in the original rules, it clearly stated that a player could not run while carrying the ball. However, the basketball team at Yale University discovered a loophole in that rule. If they bounced the ball, they could then take a few steps, grab the ball again, and then either shoot it or pass it. Because if he bounced the ball and moved while the ball was out of his hands, then he was technically not violating the rule. Other players would throw the ball up in the air and then race to catch it again. Essentially, they were passing it to themselves. But this also did not violate the rule of the day. So the YMCA committee began to develop rules that established the modern dribble as an acceptable part of the game. And this was controversial. Some thought that they should just simply close the loophole with no dribbling and no passing to yourself. But I, for one, am glad that they decided to establish the modern dribble because it made the game more exciting. However, they did take away the whole thing about passing to yourself. That would fall under a brand new rule covering traveling. By the way, Naismith himself really liked the addition of dribbling to the game. He thought it was fantastic, but this is the exact kind of thing that the rules committees was so good at addressing. If it had not been for the committee, there might have developed one version of basketball with dribbling and one without, and they would have eventually split off into two different games. Now, nothing forced people to follow the YMCA rules. It was more like on a volunteer basis, but still, if not for them, things may have been different. Then to take it a step further, the YMCA printed the first quote-unquote official rules of basketball in their magazine called The Triangle. Every year, they would publish updates to the rules to help keep everyone on the same page. As far as everyone else was concerned, the YMCA rules were the official rules of the game, and it kept basketball around the world from splitting off into different versions, as I mentioned. In 1896, the Amateur Athletic Union, or AAU, was also developing into quite an organization as they governed non-YMCA amateur teams. They organized regional leagues and tournaments outside of the YMCA, which had their own internal leagues and tournaments for YMCA teams. So the AAU had gained enough power that they were able to join the YMCA as part of the Rules Committee. The committee now had members from the YMCA and AAU helping to continue improve and develop the game of basketball. By 1915, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, had gained power as the governing body of university-level athletics. They also joined the Rules Committee. So now you have the YMCA, the AAU, and the NCAA working together to update the rules each year and govern the game of basketball. By 1927, the Referees Union also joined the committee and helped to establish rules from the referee's perspective. In 1929, the National Federation of High School Athletics also joined the committee along with the Canadian National Basketball Association. Now, there were six groups represented on the Rules Committee, and it was getting very full. Eventually, the basketball governing body disbanded with the rise of FIBA. The AAU and NCAA continue to exist, but they make their own rules separate from each other. But at this point, the game of basketball had been kept together as a single sport and had not split up into different versions of the game. So even though these organizations work separately today, each version of the game is still recognizable as the same game of basketball. They all realize today that there is a need to keep the game consistent as players make their way from youth leagues to high school and AAU leagues to college and then professionals. Minor rules might change a little bit, but it is still essentially the same game. And I give a lot of credit to the work done by those early rules committees. Now, the world would not have fallen apart if the game of basketball had split off into different versions of the game, but if it had, basketball would not have become this global game because it would have been played so differently in different parts of the world that they would have been considered different sports. So this is why American football is really popular only in America. No other country plays this version on the scale that America does. The same thing could have happened to basketball, where the American version could have been completely different from the European version or the Asian version. So I will say that those early rules committees had a foundational impact on today's immensely popular global phenomenon. By keeping it one consistent game, it allowed it to grow around the world in a consistent way so that it is popular everywhere because they play the game the same way everywhere you go in the world. Only when you look back 100 years to when those committees were in their prime does it all make sense. So I am thankful for those committees and the influence they had. Their work can still be felt in today's game because, again, around the world, it is still the same version of the game that everybody plays. Well, that is it for today. Join us next week when we share the story of Red Auerbach. As a coach and executive of the Boston Celtics, he helped to win 16 NBA championships. Nobody has more rings than Red Auerbach. That's next time on Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com to find out more about this and other sports history podcasts. If you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast. And check out our page on Facebook. It's called Basketball History 101 Podcast. There you will find shorter historical posts as well as comments and discussion starters on today's game. I'll also announce there when new episodes come out. I want to thank my producer and editor, Jacob Loiza. Join us each week as we continue to mine the history of basketball for more great stories from the past. Take care and see you soon.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
This is Mark Mortier, and if you're a sports history fan like me, tune in and hear me talk about some great sports moments of the past. Growing up during the 1970s, I got to watch some of the most iconic moments in sports history. Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. Willis Reed limping out of the locker room in Game 7 of the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden as the fans erupted with a thunderous ovation. The 1980 Miracle on Ice, as Team USA defeated the powerful Soviet Union in the Olympics. Listen every Tuesday on Yesterday Sports.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.